This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle, Friday edition of the program. Blue Friday, Dave. That's what they call it in these parts.
And I wore what's known as the pickle shirt.
The pickle.
I forgot it was Blue Friday.
The pickle shirt.
When my daughter was in high school, she branded this the pickle shirt.
You've had that shirt since your daughter was in high school?
That's what I was just going to say, yeah.
Yes, I have. I retired. Well, look, it's been in retirement for like about 3 or 4 years because this is 240, Dave.
Ah.
250, gotcha. Dave couldn't
fit in the pickle shirt.
Couldn't fit in the pickle shirt anymore.
Isn't that funny how you look in the closet and I do the same thing. Okay, there's 230 gym, 220 gym, 210 gym.
Well,
there aren't any 200 gyms in my closet.
Yeah, well, there hasn't been any in mine either since high school. But I did look at one today and I put it on. I'm like, nope, that's 235 shirt. So that's where we're headed. You're going to see me in that shirt next week and I'll point it out to you.
I love it. Well, if you want to see the pickle shirt, you can check out the video stream, 710sports.com. Click the watch live button and you can check out Dave's pickle shirt.
It's actually yellow, so I don't even know why she called
it. There's some green. It's got a green pattern on it, though.
Yeah, but I texted Jess and Danny because they're well aware of the
they're
pickle
fans
shirt.
Of the pickle shirt.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was really important that they know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure Danny appreciates it above anybody.
And for the texters, too, really. Yeah. It's an important day.
It is a big day. Again, if you want to see it, you're curious now, 710sports.com. Click the watch live button. All right, so we're getting you ready for what's coming up this weekend. The toughest test remaining before the bye week, in my opinion. I don't think that's a hot take or a bold take or whatever the trademark is on the other shows. But I think, you know, you've got the Miami Dolphins, who look like world beaters against Gardner Minshew last night. And then you got the Minnesota Vikings coming up after that, and then the bye week, and then things start to get tough. But Rasheem Green has been ruled out. He's now on the IR. Any concern with that before we move on to what Pete had to say? I mean, there are more points out on the show sheet that the stingers are lingering issues for some, force Cam and Cliff to retire. I think theirs were a bit more severe than just a stinger, though.
Yeah, especially, Cam's was like really serious. And then Cliff's was same thing. And it was such a weird one with Cliff because remember
Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah, and he fell on his heel. So
weren't they both risking paralysis of some sort?
Yeah, they were both.
If they played again?
Right. They were both thinking that, this is enough, especially, you know, at that point. But I don't think Rasheem Green's is anything like this. But, you know, he's an important player. I mean, it's not like, oh, geez, this is horrible, terrible. You know, what are we going to do without him? But, you know, it is, you know, one of those guys that is a good depth guy and a good player.
Well, yeah, you put the three together. Rasheem Green, he did lead your team in sacks last year, even if it was just four. But you take him out of the rotation, along with Bruce Irvin. There goes another pass rusher. And Benson Mayoa sounds like he's listed as questionable, but he was out of practice both Wednesday and Thursday. I don't know what they did today, probably a walkthrough. But Mayoa, with that groin injury, probably won't be up to his usual standards health-wise. And so, yeah, you're kind of depleted at that spot.
Well, here's what Pete Carroll had to say about Rasheem Green going to the IR and thought on Mayoa.
Rasheem, it's just going to be a couple more weeks, so this was the right way to handle this, to give him, you know, we're expecting him to come back to us. He's just got to get through the process and make sure that he can pass his tests. And so it's going to be a couple weeks, we think, so this is going to work out okay in terms of putting him down, and he'll be available to return.
Benson.
Oh, yeah, Benson. Benson is practiced today and did all right, so he looks like he's got a chance. You know, I think he's probably questionable right now, but he's coming back to us, so it looks like he's got a chance.
So there you go. There's what Pete had to say about that. Not obviously not great news. I don't want to rip Rasheem Green, but the reality is he's not a guy that this defense is built around. He's part of the solution, hopefully, but he's not. It's not, Jim, like you're removing a guy who's your 10 sack guy, your 12 sack guy, your extra meeting guy. He's He's a guy on the defensive line.
No, I know, but you lose Rasheem Green, then who are you talking about?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, nobody gets excited about DeMontre Moore, I don't think. And Alton Robinson, a fifth-round choice that everybody liked in camp, you can't really expect too much from him right away.
Yeah, I don't know that they've got the answer on the roster. I mean, I think we'll find out. You know, Jordan Brooks will get the start this week. You know, we'll see what Alton Robinson looks like. I think it's unfair to expect either to come in here and just, you know, set the world afire in their first game. No preseason, nothing up to this point, really, especially for Robinson. So I think you got to keep expectations in check and hope they can do it as a collective out there. I just don't know that they have that guy, so to
speak. Well, the only thing is, Bob, is that you've been hoping for that. Not you, but everybody's been hoping for that collectively in the first two games, and we haven't seen it. And now collectively...
Wait, I thought you were giving the defense a pass. What happened?
And now collectively, let me finish my train of thought here. Now collectively, they don't have as big a collection. Okay?
Okay.
They don't. You know, and when Mayoa talked about you need a village, well, the village is a little smaller now.
The village is vacant?
Yeah. Yeah.
The village is empty.
Yeah.
Mayoa also said, you know, it doesn't matter so much about the name on your back and how, yeah, we're going to do it together. So, but, yeah, I'll be interested to see Alton Robinson. And at 3:45... we're going to talk to Cliff Avril, and he's a guy that...
Can you suit up?
Yeah, no Last. Kidding. Yeah, we might ask if he's good to go. But, yeah, and that was just such a weird injury for him. But he's been coaching up some of these guys, Alton Robinson being one of them. So, but, yeah, it just... They're never good. I told you guys, I'll sit around and whine about injuries all game long, man. I mean,
you'll break character for injuries.
Yeah.
I got you.
Here's what I would say, though. I think they should win this game. I don't think the Cowboys are very good. And last,
I don't feel like we know, do we?
Well, I
look
kinda,
at the roster and you go, boy, they should be good. There's a lot of talented names on that roster, yet the way they've played so far feels like they're kind of trying to find it.
Well, and they've had some injuries, and we'll talk about this when we get into the three players to watch, but they got a guy named Terrence Steele, who, as far as I know, I mean, I'd have to look around the rest of the NFL. I confirmed this with Clayton, that as far as undrafted free agent rookies, I think at the beginning of the season, there was, I think, 33 that were on rosters, on 53-man rosters. This guy is starting at right tackle, and he started two games. So, you know, that their offensive line is okay. We'll see what happens with Tyron Smith. And then, you know, I'm not sure that they're the same offensive line that they used to be, but, you know, we'll see. But you're right. You really don't know. I just got a feel for the Patriot game that was going to be a close game because of the coaching matchup, but I'm not so sure what's going on there. I was kind of watching a couple of the games. Mike Nolan, their D coordinator, is pretty bland. I mean, I feel like he's pretty straightforward and conservative, and he's new, obviously, new staff and everything. You know, they really, that onside kick was a ridiculous farce. I mean, that thing.
It was a great kick, but the Falcons were so inept, it was embarrassing.
Their tight end, Dalton Schultz, this last week, I have a buddy down in Dallas, and he goes, yeah, he's a Stanford guy. So I was talking to my Stanford buddy down there, and he's like, yeah, Dalton Schultz said, yeah, we tried that kick like 15 times in practice, and it never worked once.
Why? Because people actually jumped on the ball?
Yeah, I guess. Or the thing didn't go 10 yards. And that's what I think Atlanta was thinking. And nobody wanted to jump on and have the ball squirt out or anything like that. So, but, you know, I mean, they were lucky to win that game. They scored 17 points against the Rams. And a lot of people call that the sort of no-name defense. I mean, they've got Brockers and Aaron Donald. You know, they got Abukum. But, you know, other than that, not a lot of good. I don't know. I just get a feel that this isn't a team that's super well put together. So that's my take going into this. I feel like they should win this. And you know what I think is going to happen? I think you're going to see Jamal Adams make some plays in the passing game. That's just That's who he is. I mean, that guy is like he can pretty much do whatever he wants to do. And, you know, if he thinks that that's a problem and he's going to work on it, you know, I think you might see him make some plays. And I think it's going to be a big difference having Quandre Diggs out there. And I got to say, I'm usually not this sunny and, you know, as far as the outlook for the game. Because every time, and it's just this is the way it was when I played in the NFL, you go and you're getting ready to play a team that's, you know, headed to be a 2-14 team. You start looking at film and you're like, that guy's really good. Oh, that dude's good. I don't care if they're 2-14. You know, this is a good group of guys, and I usually get that way, but I'm just, the more I get towards this game, the more I feel like the Cowboys are not that great of a team.
Dave, do you really think in your heart of hearts that when your opponents looked at the 92 Seahawks and they saw Stan Gelbaugh, that they had fear in their hearts?
I think that if they were looking at the defense, they were saying, that defense is really good. Stan Gelbaugh, no. But, you know, you had Brian Blades on that team, baller, right?
Yeah.
You know, you had Chris
Warren,
who was like,
John
that
L.
guy
Williams
was like
on
a
there?
Freight train. Yeah, John L. was really good. I mean, you had some good players.
But
on that
offense, I don't think I'm exaggerating. Didn't they average 10 points a game?
Well, they were the fifth worst offense in NFL history.
Yeah.
And that's going back to like the 1930s when they used to score the 7-3 and things
wearing
like that.
Wearing leather helmets and whatnot.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was bad.
Why are you throwing salt in the wound, Jim? That's uncalled for.
I don't care.
No, I throw salt in the wound when it comes to that side of the ball. But Dave knows I've always complimented him about the defense that year. Can you imagine how good that defense would have been? It was already one of the better defenses anyway in the league. But if they'd had a half-decent offense.
Would have been a great team.
Yeah, we held the Raiders to like 183 yards. 183 yards, and they
total
beat us
yards.
Like, yeah, total yards, and they beat us like 27-6 or something.
You know? Seahawks gave that up in the fourth quarter, the Patriots.
Well, it's a different game these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Well, Pete Carroll talked about a couple of other injuries. Updates on Dunbar and Nico Thorpe.
With Quinn, he didn't practice much this week, but he looks like he's ready to play. But we wanted to make sure and give him as much rest time as possible. Nico's got a groin thing going here that we got to figure out and make sure that he's ready to roll also. So we won't know until game time.
All right. So it sounds like Dunbar's probably good to go. The torpedo, maybe.
Yeah.
He's a game time decision perhaps. And then one other one, he just talked about it, you know, talking about free agents and things like that, how, you know, the restrictions with COVID and everything has made that process a little tougher.
It's different because of the time frame it takes. You know, it's hard to immediately respond if you want to do that. And so you have to plan everything out and you got to get it organized for, you know, and so that, and you don't always have all of the information. So we have to solve our problems immediately from within. And that's what we're trying to be prepared to do. And then when you can find a guy that, you know, that could match up and could fill a need, then, you know, we'll go ahead and work outside. We're always looking. We're always working. That's nothing new for you guys to hear from me. But that's the whole point, is that we're always trying to work to know what's out there, what we could possibly do, and you know, have the information that's necessary to get it done.
So, talking about Clay Matthews or anybody from the outside, he's talking about how much harder it is to evaluate guys because of the restrictions. Now, it feels like the NFL's got this thing dialed in as far as their testing and you know, having people sequestered, if you will, for a period of time. I mean, the infections have been remarkably low. How tough would it be to say, all right, let's have Clay, any player, but just Clay Matthews as an example, let's fly him in here, let's take a look at him. Through the testing process and all that good stuff. I mean, I feel like if they truly wanted to look at somebody, they can.
Yeah, well, yeah. Now, I guess I kind of read that, because here's a good example: Daryl Taylor. Mm-hmm. He's kind of a COVID casualty because, you know, they couldn't get their arms around him for his rehab. And what Daryl Taylor did, from what I understand, is he worked too hard. I mean, this guy really wanted to get back from that injury. This is the second-round draft choice that the Seahawks took out of Tennessee. And so, you know, that was one of those things that, because of the COVID landscape, they weren't able to – because lots of times – and this is something you'll love about a guy like that, is that he works too hard, you know, and he got himself some tendonitis and things like that, from what I understand. So that's something that, you know, is – I think what Pete's talking about there is – you know, what's Clay Matthews look like? What are some of these guys, you know, how have they worked in the offseason? I mean, Clay Matthews, you have, you know, a phone conversation, I guess, is one thing, but you don't know, like, does he still have the fire? Does he still want to play? And I wonder if maybe he's talking a little bit about that, you know, that we can't really, you know, you can now, but you don't really know how this guy handled the whole offseason and working out and everything. So as you know, Bob, it was hard to find dumbbells at the beginning of COVID-19.
Really hard.
Yeah.
It truly was very, very hard.
I mean, because people were working out from home and they were, you know, all the clubs were closed and workout facilities. So, you know, there's a little bit of that as well. And, you know, and the same another theme that I just mentioned is the free agents, you know, the undrafted free agents and especially the rookie free agents. It's just really tough for them to make teams. And, you know, because of the lack of OTAs and preseason games.
Yeah, you know, we know that Snacks Harrison is coming in next week for a visit and presumably a workout with the Seahawks. But, yeah, you wonder a little bit, well, why didn't you bring him in this week? You know, so, yeah, maybe there's some of the COVID things going on, the protocol that prevented that from happening. I'm not sure, but, yeah, it's got to be just a difficult year all the way around.
Yeah, you know, I did notice that 2020 sucks.
Yeah, it just dawned on you?
Yeah, I have noticed that.
But Dave was just thinking about it the other day, going, this year's not been great. You know,
has anybody else
not been a great year? Yeah. One more from Pete, just talking about what he expects in this game. He's anticipating it could be a bit of a shootout.
They're going to come in here wide open, I would think. I heard Coach McCarthy say that, you know, they got to score a lot of points or whatever, so I would think that this is going to be a real shootout if they could have it the way they want it, and we'll see how we do with that.
Well, it's their job to make sure they can have it the way they want, right? The defense has got to step up in this game because it feels like the potential for a shootout is certainly there. When you've got Dak, when you've got Ezekiel Elliott, you've got Amari Cooper, there's a lot of weapons on that offense. They're capable. Now, can they put it together in this game? We'll see. Can the defense put it together in this game? That's the bigger question for me based on the first two games. But, yeah, a shootout would be probably the least surprising thing in this, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, based on how it's gone, I mean, the Seahawks have only, is it the Lions, or maybe they've given up more yards than anybody. And I know, you know, it's points. And if you take the interception return, they're top 15. So points aren't terrible. The yards, yeah, they've been putting up lots of yards. And I saw him, that quote from him yesterday, McCarthy, and he's talking about how, yeah, we're not going to slow it down. We're going to score fast. And so they're bringing Kellen Moore in here, their offensive coordinator. And you're right, the weapons, I mean, this may be the better, I mean, maybe it's Atlanta, but this might be the better receiving core with Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb and Dalton Schultz kid out of Stanford's pretty good, the tight end. And so,
Michael Gallup.
Gallup, yep, exactly. So that's what it would look like. But, you know, I feel like Jamal Adams is going to be much improved in their pass defense. And, you know, this could be a game for some takeaways.
Yeah, I think you're right about Adams, especially when he met with the media yesterday talking about, oh, yeah, I heard from Dallas about my coverage skills, and so that's something that he's going to take a chip on his shoulder into this game. And then he's from Dallas, and you know how much this game is going to mean to him against the Cowboys. He even talked in the offseason. I think Dallas was probably his number one landing spot if he were to leave the Jets. And we all know he ended up here in Seattle, but... And then I saw, too, I think Joe Fan had a picture of it, or somebody did. He's got a star tattoo on his thigh for the Dallas Stars. He's not even really a hockey fan, he said. But still, it's just kind of a tip of the cap to his hometown. So you know how much this game is going to mean to him tomorrow night. And I think you guys are right. I mean, even Vegas thinks you're right. It's the biggest over-under on any game in the NFL schedule this weekend at 56. So they're expecting... Ooh. They're expecting what, a 31-24 type game?
Where would you go, Jim? Would you take the over?
Holy.
What? Yeah, I probably would go over, but, you know, I mean, how well are these offenses going to function when you start thinking about a Cowboys team that doesn't have their starting left tackle, their starting right tackle? Will Elliott have time to, you know, find room to run? Will Prescott have time to throw? All those different things. Didn't seem to be that much of an issue, though, against Atlanta. And he's only been sacked four times. And you expect the Seahawks. I mean, the Seahawks should score 30 points or more in this game, shouldn't they?
You'd hope so. Well, listen, neither one of these defenses are any great shakes. I'm looking at the defense right now. Seahawks are dead last in yards allowed. Now, it's two games, so you keep everything in context. But through two games, they're dead last at 485 per game is their average. The Cowboys aren't that much better. They're allowing 401 per game. You look at points allowed, which is the ultimate stat. Through two games, again, understanding, small sample set, 29.5 points for the Cowboys, 27.5 for the Seahawks. So you got two suspect defenses going up against each other and two offenses, one that's really clicking in the Seahawks, one that has the ability to truly click in the Cowboys. that number seems pretty good, Jim. I'd be with you, and I'd probably take the over.
But Dave knows this, Bob.
I know what you're going to say, Jim.
And I think, Bob, you will too, is that whenever anyone – like, everyone thinks this is going to be a high-scoring game.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone.
You go the other way.
And so what happens is you got guys down there in Vegas betting with both hands that it's going to go over 56.
Right.
And then we'll probably be hearing Joe Buck and Troy Aikman saying, well, there's your halftime score, Seattle 10, Dallas 3. So, you know, yeah. It's – yeah, I mean –
yeah. Well, yeah, I thought you were going to say what you always say. We always talked about, Jim, that whenever something seems like, oh, it's definitely going to work out this way.
Go opposite.
Never does.
Yeah.
Never does.
Take the other
side. So the other thing, the points thing, again, just minor detail, but still, you take it down to an average of 23 that they've given up if you take away the pick.
So on the pick, they put that on the defense as part of their average allowed?
Well, it's just the overall, yeah, I believe so.
Huh. That's interesting. I never realized that. I thought they somehow accounted for the fact.
Well, maybe they are doing that now. I don't think they are, but that used to always fall on that, and that was always something that you kind of had to, you know. But I mean, look, it's one play. It's not that big of a deal anyway. But yeah, it's to me, I feel like it could go the other way on this one because, and Jim, isn't a typical over under like 40, 41, something like that? 42?
Oh, not that low, but scoring is up league wide. Clayton talks about that. It's way up. So, yeah, it's just so much easier for offenses to score these days. Dave, you've talked about that too. But no, I think it's more in the 40s, but yeah, it's kind of rare to see it in the 50s.
All right, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two. The Pac-12 will play a 7-game college football season beginning November 6th. Every Pac-12 team will play 5 opponents in its division, plus a divisional crossover game prior to the December 18th conference championship.
And they're not going to be eligible for the title game, right? National title game?
No, I haven't seen that.
I thought that was the word. Maybe I misread that. But,
well, you know, chance I missed it too, but I think there's still the hope that a 7-0 Pac-12 team could enter that playoff speculation at least.
This is going to be an odd season. I mean, I'm glad there's going to be football because I'm, you know, I like college football. I'm excited to see how the new coaches do. It's going to be interesting to see how the two Washington schools do with new coaches. I mean, Jimmy Lake has been part of that program, so it's not nearly as much of an adjustment for him. But Rolovich, I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see how he handles this. And, you know, I don't know. Are we going to get a really clear picture of what these teams truly are or who they truly are in a shortened season like this?
Yeah, I think so. New coaches and then both schools looking for starting quarterbacks, too. So that it's going to be fun to. And then I was already thinking about, I wonder when the Apple Cup's going to be played. It'll probably be in December. I mean, it was scheduled for the Friday after Thanksgiving this year in Pullman. And
is there going to be snow?
Is there going to be snow there?
It's going to be cold.
Not snow.
No. It'll be cold
just
there.
Just no snow.
No, we don't need snow. We don't need to talk about Gardner Minshew anymore, Bob. I heard your shot earlier.
Oh, it's going to come up later, buddy.
Yeah, I bet it will.
Buckle up.
The Astros' 12-4 win over the Rangers last night officially eliminated the M's from playoff contention.
I can't act like I'm super disappointed. I mean, yeah, having hope going into the weekend is pretty cool. But, I mean, if we were being realistic, and we talked about this before, yeah, they weren't going to find the postseason. I mean, and that wasn't part of the plan going in, right? When we talked about this before the whole pandemic, management set up everybody for the idea that, hey, this year is not about postseason and wins and losses. It's about developing the youth, which I think we got a nice glimpse of. I mean, I think if you're a Mariner fan, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about this team moving forward. They gave you a really clear picture, and that's without their super studs that are in the minors. We didn't see Rodriguez or Kelnick or any of the pitchers we've talked about. So you've got players that you had a chance to see at this level to be excited about moving forward, and that's without the ones that you're truly counting on.
Yeah, well, all the cracks that Passan made on Jim yesterday, it got kind of lost
those
in there.
Good.
He was talking about how he thinks he's pretty sure Kyle Lewis is going to be
rookie of the year.
Yeah. So, and it was really nice to see him, you know, confirm that he can actually really play. This kid can really play. So that was the other thing. But I thought you were going to do a Seinfeld there when you found out they were eliminated. Oh, that's a shame.
Oh. I do that for teams I don't like.
But, I mean,
like
look,
the Mariners.
Like you said, we love them. It's just that that's not really what was expected.
Did you hear the exciting news about the Mariners today, though?
What's that?
About the player they acquired?
No.
the White Sox, they cut this player 11 days ago, and he went to Skyview High School in Vancouver, Bob, and he also went to Washington State. Ian Hamilton, a right-handed pitcher. A Coug is on the Mariners now, Bob.
All right. Fantastic news. That's wonderful. Okay. Hey, coming up, we've got John Clayton at 4 o'clock. We've got Cody Barton in our player spotlight at 5 o'clock. The great Cliff Averill will join us at 3.
You like Cliff, don't you? Something tells me
you
like Cliff.
I think I've said it a time or 12. One of my
everybody likes him.
My all-time favorites out there. So we'll talk to him at 3:45. But we've had some questions surrounding this defense, and now there's a couple of new names on the injury list. So what is the most concerning issue to you heading into Sunday's game? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at 3:45, the great Cliff Averill will join us here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. You guys can text in throughout the show. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line.
Harden hitting the crazy train.
Going old school, Ozzy.
Lay off the Ozzy.
I think this album just had an anniversary. Is it 40 Ozzy. Years? Might be 40 years. You should put some more ice in that drink, Jim. I think it's something like that. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong.
What is it, cocktail hour over there, Jim, already? What do you got going on there?
Actually, it's kind of a pineapple club soda with a shot of blue Kool-Aid in it.
Blue pineapple Kool-Aid. Club soda.
What flavor is the Kool-Aid? Blue.
Blueberry.
Yeah, it's kind of a berry thing.
Sounds good.
Just kind of squirt it in there. Yeah.
Sounds kind of good.
Yeah. No, I'm not drinking at 3:30. Come on. I'm working.
Knocking back a couple of whiskey sours. He's got a bottle of Aftershock there. He's ready to go. By the end of the show, he's going to be tuned up and special.
Jim's going to tell you what he really thinks.
All right. So going into this game, we talked about, you know, the fact that they're dealing with some injuries on a defense that was already struggling with everybody healthy. And, Jim, I know you've got questions about, you know, whether you're more concerned about secondary, defensive line, linebackers. Where is it for you? Where's your biggest concern?
Well, probably defensive line, because when you think about Bruce Irvin out for a full game, and he hadn't really done much, but you expected him to because he'd been averaging 8 sacks throughout his whole career, so you knew that he was starting to get revved up at some point. And then Mayoa is listed as questionable, so you don't have him. And you just, you know, you look at that, and the defensive line, they've been good against the run so far, but haven't been able to get to the quarterback, and part of the reason they're giving up so many passing yards. Linebacker, you can make a case for that with Jordan Brooks coming in. You have expectations, high expectations for him being a first-round pick, but you don't know yet until you see him. And then the secondary really hasn't been any great shakes to this point. Dunbar is even more of a concern to me this week because Pete Carroll saying in the last segment, we heard from him saying he hasn't practiced much. He needed the rest. He's got a knee issue. And he hasn't been all that great, really, has he, Dave? I don't know. You know, I'm just sitting there. If I'm Trey Flowers, I'm thinking, man, this might be a chance for me this week.
Well, he got an interception, and then he knocked a pass down, and then he did some really good things in the run game. I think he's been good.
Okay.
I think he's going to be, and I think he's just going to get better. But, I mean, look, it's been an uphill battle kind of for him. I mean, there's lots of guys. You know, we talked about the COVID thing and whether or not guys are in shape. I mean, this was a tough offseason for Dunbar. I think, here's what I would say about him, Jim. I think he's very promising. And in the meantime, he hasn't played poorly. He's actually made plays. And I think it's hard at corner to make plays. You don't, you know, what was it, 6 interceptions? Mora would know this, that Stephon Gilmore got last year, and that made him MVP. I mean, it's hard getting corner when you're a corner. I mean, safeties, they're in the middle of the field. But for a corner, it's tough to get, you know, those kinds of numbers. He's already been around the ball a couple of times. So, yeah, maybe, you know, you look at the yards, though, and you go, well, how can you say that their defensive backfield is playing well? But I don't know. I just, again, I think there's a lot of promise there. I think there's something that's coming that's going to be, you know, that they're going to get a little bit better at and be able to play a little tighter defense. I feel like they're just kind of starting to settle into, you know, trusting playing man-to-man, and that they're getting to the point. But then, you know, then you take a huge step back with the injury to Marquise Blair. So I can kind of understand. And then, like you said, the numbers are up this year. By the way, the scoring defense, they do include the pick sixes. At least the ESPN does.
Yeah. That's wrong. Shouldn't do that. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with defense.
Yeah.
It seems like something you should not have in
should
there.
Take
no,
out.
You're not even on the field.
Right.
Why should you get penalized for that?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's just laziness, I guess.
That's unfair.
But yeah, I mean, to me, I guess I want to see, what do I want to see more urgently? Is it a pass rush or, you know, some takeaways and tighter pass coverage? It's the pass coverage. But I feel like I have a lot of faith in that they're going to get that done. I think they have the right players back there, as long as nobody else gets hurt.
Is some of the struggle in pass coverage, though, linked to the fact that there's no pass rush? Because Cam Newton had all day, and you can only ask these guys to cover for so long. It's not as if, you know, and again, you talked about this last year, that guys were getting rid of the ball really quickly. So it really negated whatever pass rush was there. In this situation, it hasn't been that. I mean, Cam Newton sat there all day. And, you know,
yeah, but Bob, was it all day, all night, though? Because
it was a lot, Jim. I watched the game twice, and it not every single play. No, there were plays where he took off, or there were plays he got rid of.
Yeah, he was moving around
quicker than others.
There were a couple, like Pete Carroll was saying, there were a few times that there were near sacks where he just ducked out of the way.
Adams got a hand on him once, and
Mayoa.
Do you think would we have been talking differently about it, though, if they ended up with three sacks instead of one?
I think the yardage we'd still be talking about.
Okay.
You know, you put up over 400 yards on them 2 weeks in a row. I think you're going to talk about it. It just that to me was the difference, though, because I really paid attention to the time. And all right, how much is he just firing that ball as soon as he gets it, or what's he doing? And there were a number of plays where he really was safe as a kitten back there. And I think you can only ask so much of your corners. At some point, there's going to be a separation. There's going to be a gap. And they found it.
Well, I do think, though, what Jim brings up is a good point. I mean, if we're sitting here with five sacks, you're a lot more encouraged.
Right.
You know, if they get those two. But, look, they're just never going to be that team. I mean, right now the Steelers have 10 sacks in two games. They got seven last week. They're just not – that's the way their defense is designed. This is more about taking the ball away. Now they only got one, but you're also playing a Bill Belichick team, which they just don't. I mean, they've averaged less than one turnover per game for the last 8 years, the Patriots. That's just a Belichick thing, and Pete's pretty close. You know, I think we're a little over one per game giveaways. So this week could be just an onslaught of takeaways, you know, maybe three, four, something like that, because, again, I just don't think the Cowboys are a very good team. They got new coaches. They got new things, you know, going on. Offensive line, not what it used to be. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. If you know, how will you feel though if they get three sacks?
Really
good. That'll make
you better.
Really good.
Yeah, I'll feel a lot better
because they could have had three. I mean, look, that was and maybe Jamal Adams gets to plays when he falls off of a tackle or something. I think a lot of other guys wouldn't even have been close.
Right. All right. Coming up, we get a chance to speak to one of the great Seahawks, one of the great guys, really. Cliff Avril is going to join us next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor John Clayton will join us here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. But it's always a pleasure to speak with this man. I tell you every time, one of my all-time favorite Seahawks ever, and just a great guy. The great Cliff Avril is here with us. How are you, man?
I am well. How are you? How are you guys doing?
We're good, Cliff. You know, whenever you're feeling down, just call into our show, and we'll make you feel so much better, man.
I might have to start doing that.
Yeah, you'll
love it.
You'll be welcomed with open arms. Hey, Cliff, give me your thoughts on this defense through the first two games. We all, you know, keep into consideration it's a small sample size. It's just two games. But this was a problem last year in terms of, you know, the pass defense and the pass rush. And we're kind of seeing it in the first two games so far this year. What's your takeaway?
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of things that need to be corrected, obviously. You know, you look at the yardage, you look at, you know, from a passing standpoint, you look at the sacks. Those things go hand in hand, you know, and I think they play a big role in why there's so many yards, but obviously plays a big role in why the quarterback has enough time to do so or whatnot. So, you know, it's hard to find pass rushes right now as well. You know, a lot of guys are getting beat up.
losing Bruce is huge. Although he didn't have any sacks, you know, the experience and just being able to understand when pass plays will be in, be played and different things like that, just it just hurts the team. And then also the leadership, you know. So it definitely played a big role in the last 2 weeks. But I do think with Jaren Reed, Puna Ford, and all those guys, they just have to get acclimated with one another. And I do think they will start to gel a little bit more and hopefully start to get more pressure on the quarterback.
Hey, Cliff, I think I texted you during camp saying, wow, Alton Robinson looks good. The kid out of Syracuse that they drafted in the fifth round. And you had been working with him. But, I don't know if you got a chance to see him at practice. But tell everybody what we should be excited about as far as Alton Robinson goes.
Well, I think the biggest thing is, you know, his work ethic. You know, he wants to get better. He's finding ways to get better, you know, staying in contact with me and just asking questions and whatnot. So, you know, when I work with some of the younger players, even when I played, you know, the first thing I try to pay attention to more so than anything is how thirsty is this kid for knowledge, right? Because everybody's athletic. Everybody's great in the NFL. But the thing that separates guys is the mental piece and the thirst for it. And he seems to have that so far. So I'm excited. Hopefully you get the kind of, you know, I'm assuming he's dressing this week with Bruce going down and kind of getting his first few reps as a pro. But, you know, again, the kid works hard. He wants to learn and you know, you just want to see him succeed. And I think he will.
Cliff, do you think they should go after a guy like Clay Matthews or just ride it out with what they have?
I think you need some veteran leadership. You know, I don't think enough coaches in the NFL in particular give enough credit to just experience, you know, just being in a space where you know the game of football. You know, I know sometimes it's cheaper to go with the younger guys, but experience definitely plays a big role. So, yes, I think going after somebody like a Clay Matthews who's consistently around quarterbacks, who's consistently being, you know, that guy that can get sacks and whatnot. And, again, also the piece about these young players being able to know who to look up to and understand. It's one thing for the coach to tell you something, but it's another thing for you to see a player tell you something and go out there and do it. You know, so, yes, I think going after Clay would be huge on multiple fronts. And he'd be reuniting with his coach, Coach Carroll.
What do you think of the idea that the word is they're going to bring in Snacks Harrison for a visit? He doesn't really solve the pass rush per se, but he is a guy that maybe requires a double team, thus opening up things for guys on the edge. Do you like the idea of him joining the team potentially?
Well, I think it's the depth piece, right? You know, you think about all those years that we were pretty good on defense. We had a lot of depth on the D-line, you know, from Super Bowl year on out, right? So I think that's more so the case here is having another veteran on that D-line, having a little bit of depth on the interior guys. You know, you think about Jaren Reed, you think about Puna Ford and Brian Monet maybe, but you need another guy in there to just be able to give these guys a win. I'm looking at snap counts. Jay Reed is out there pretty much 90% of the snaps. And that's not going to be good for the long haul of the season. So I think it's a little bit more than just the pass rush. It's just allowing these guys to be able to survive the rest of the season as well.
Hey, Cliff, Jamal Adams, and I feel like you and Michael Bennett, when you came to the team, were kind of that spark that just ignited the defense to be so good. But talk about a player like that. It's amazing, his energy. I know it comes through on the broadcasts. It comes through out at practice. I mean, what can a guy like that bring to your defense?
First and foremost, it's rare for me, you know, obviously watching a lot of football, playing with a lot of great players, to be so excited about one individual over just two games. And just watching what Jamal has been able to do over the last 2 weeks has been extremely impressive. I mean, you know, I can't say I've been watching the Jets and seeing what he was doing out there out east, but to see him come in and change the dynamic of this defense and the energy that he brings and how hype he is. But more so than anything, he does a wide range of different things.
Yeah.
You might see him biting the ball down from Julio. Then you see him blitzing the quarterback and getting a sack or something like that on Cam Newton or something like that. He's just very versatile, and that's what you need on a defense. So, you know, the energy, you can tell he's a leader out there. He's vocal. He's speaking to the guys. He's communicating. You know, it's extremely impressive to watch. I can't lie. And, again, for a guy that's played with some Hall of Famers, this guy definitely has the potential to be one of those guys and change up the defense.
Cliff, he had 6.5 sacks last year with the Jets, and he leads the Seahawks with 2 sacks, 2 of their 3 sacks this year. At the end of the year, if Jamal Adams is your sack leader – Does it matter one way or the other? Or is that, to me, that sounds like it's a bad sign for your defense overall if you got a strong safety who's leading you in sacks.
Well, I'm telling you, as a D lineman, I'd be hot. I'd be mad. I'd be every word possible, right? Because there's no way the safety who is supposed to be covering guys in the middle of the field should be having more sacks than me when that's all I do. So, and understanding the scheme and different things like that, yes, it would be an issue, but you have to apply pressure however you see fit. And if this guy can do that by bringing him, in the blitz and whatnot, you got to do what you got to do. But yes, as a D lineman and as a fan of great defenses, yes, I would be extremely mad and ticked if the safety is leading the team in sacks.
He is Cliff Averill, our guest here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. And you obviously had a chance to watch Russell go up against him in practice through two games. And again, acknowledging it's just two games, but is this as good as he's ever looked to you?
MVP. This man is playing at a high level, man. It's so interesting because, you talk to some of the national guys and, where they place Russ, he's top five, maybe, top three type situation. And what's most impressive for me with Russell Wilson is every single year for the last 9 years, he's literally gotten better. The numbers have gotten better. He's more efficient. He's throwing less interceptions, whatever the case may be, but he's getting better every single year. And that's hard to do. After year five, you're pretty much plateaued. You just got to maintain that. This guy's gotten better every single year. So, it's extremely impressive. Who knows what's in the tank? It feels like every year we talk to Coach Carroll, and he's like, man, yeah, he's getting better every year. And it's just weird to hear as a pro because, at some point you just got to maintain how good you are and you kind of plateau. This man is just constantly finding ways to better himself, and it's cool to watch. As his friend, as a teammate, as a fan of the game, it's really, really cool to watch this man do what he's been doing and putting the team on his shoulders, putting the organization on his shoulders. Completely opposite of what it was, when he first started, and now he's owned it. And again, it's pretty doggone cool to watch as a fan.
That's a great point because he was brought in here to just don't screw it up, kid, and the ball off. Hey, I want to ask you about Quandre Diggs, and if you were him, what do you do? I always say hits like that are an accident. He doesn't want to get thrown out of the game. He doesn't want to get fined. He wants to stay on the field. They're 6-1 with him as a starter, but for a player going through that, that's a tough one, I guess. What do you do? Same things for pass rushers now. You can't land on the quarterback. It's difficult.
Yeah, it's tough. Obviously, me being a defensive player, of course, but obviously the game is catered towards the offense, right? Because, you look at Diggs' play there, it's not like he intentionally tried to do it. And, for some people that might say, hey, well, you got to be a pro and all this, they clearly haven't played football at a fast pace, right? Because getting your head out of the way and trying to put your shoulder on it, it's maybe 2 inches of a difference, right? So trying to get your head out of the way on a bang bang play like that, it's almost impossible to do, and that's how guys end up getting hurt as well. I know we're trying to be more on the safety side of things as far as for getting your head out and defenseless receivers and different things like that, which is needed, but it has to be fair on both sides, and just playing at a high level, being one of those guys on the back end when you have to make a decision that fast. Either you hit him or you don't, and he possibly gives up a touchdown. That's just a hard position to be in. And you talk about the pass rush and different things like that, not being able to fall on quarterbacks. And you see some guys tearing their knee up trying not to fall on quarterbacks, right? So it's just an unfair situation for defensive players. And I blame it on fantasy football, and I blame it on, people wanting to see high scoring points because that's what it's catered towards.
Those darn fantasy players, man, messing everything up.
Messing everything up, man.
hey, Cliff, before we let you go, we know you've got the Cliff Averill Family Foundation. You've got an event coming up here soon. Tell our listeners what's going on with that and how they can get involved.
Yes, we have our Dining to Make a Difference event that or dinner that we always put together during the fall. And usually, and I hate saying celebrity, and I have air quotes while I'm doing it. I hate saying celebrity for waiters for the evening, but all my friends, whether it's, you know, they retired Seahawks players or current Seahawks players, they're waiters for the evening. Obviously, we can't do that this year with all the pandemic and COVID and all that good stuff, or that stuff, should I say. We're going to actually bring the guys to you. So if you buy a VIP ticket, we're going to have guys delivering meals to your home. So it's a great way of staying involved, and it's all for a great cause. It's all for the Cliff Avril Family Foundation. The mission is towards juvenile diabetes and a wide range of different things that we do here in the city. But to get more information, go to CliffAvrilFamilyFoundation.org. You know, tickets are flying out, and people want to have, you know, maybe a Russell Wilson or a Bobby Wagner come. I'm not promising that they'll be at your house, but maybe you get one of these guys to come knock on your door and deliver food that day.
That is really cool.
That's a great idea.
That is very cool, the idea that one of these guys knocks on your door, and there they are for a 12. That's a slice of heaven right there. So check it out. CliffAvrilFamilyFoundation.org. CliffAvrilFamilyFoundation.org is where you get info on that. That's coming up September 28th. Cliff, we love you, man. We appreciate you taking a few minutes, as always, and look forward to talking soon.
I appreciate you guys having me. It's always a pleasure.
There you go. Thanks, the great Cliff Avril. Love talking to that guy. What a cool thing.
That's
cool
a really
that?
Good idea.
That's a fan. That's,
yeah.
You know,
I
why think it's actually better than just being there and their waiters having them come to your own house. That's pretty cool.
Well, he said celebrities in air quotes because he's kind of uncomfortable with it. I was always that way, too, because, like, you know, one time I played in these celebrity golf tournaments. I'm like, guys, I show up. I'm like, not only am I not a celebrity, I suck at golf.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. So that would, I think he's, you know, some of those guys are, they don't want to. You know, they're not comfortable, I guess.
He's humble.
Yeah, he's humble. There you go.
Cliff is very humble on top of all of it. So, yeah, check that out again, CliffAvrilFamilyFoundation.org, and maybe you get a player to show up at your house. How cool is that? All right, the professor is coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Seahawks-Cowboys matchup. You guys can start texting in any questions you've got for John Clayton right now. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.